The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
Magical to be with you. I'm Ben McKechin.
Hey, and surprise, I'm Russell Matthews.
Welcome to episode 62 of The Big Picture for the week beginning June 5. And coming up on today's show, Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling are the nice guys, but how nice are they really?
Magic, illusion, trickery, and the sequel. Now You See Me Too is here, complete with Harry Potter.
And Julia Roberts and George Clooney are in life or death financial trouble, Russ, in the new hostage thriller Money Monster. But before we get to all that, Russell Matthews, what on earth are you doing here?
How are you going? Well, you know what? Actually, we've kind of shipped Mark off to this tropical island where he's writing some novel or something like that.
I didn't know the Big Picture budget extended so far to tropical islands.
It's amazing. So that's why they got the budget that they did. They give me.
Mate, don't be like that. So Mark's away. Oh, that's right. He's away for the next 2 weeks writing his novel.
2 weeks. It's all right.
We've got you for two weeks. Okay, fantastic. But this week, Russ, we should be focusing on this week. And before we get to our first now showing choice, The Nice Guys, also at cinemas this week is Queen of the Desert. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, I've heard of it, but I'd love to hear more.
But not Priscilla.
We're
talking about our Nicole Kidman. Our Nicole Kidman is starring as real-life wilderness explorer Gertrude Bell in Queen of the Desert. Gertrude Bell was basically the female version of Lawrence of Arabia. She was on the Arabian Peninsula in the early 1900s. Queen of the Desert is now showing at cinemas. We're going to review it on next week's show, so I'll say more about it then.
Okay, fantastic. Actually, also coming out this week on DVD and Blu-ray, probably the first time many people even heard about this film was at the Academy Awards, because Brie Larson actually won for the best actress for the film called Room.
Room, you love that movie.
I love that film, and it was actually a phenomenal film. It was a really disturbing content as far as a young lady who had been kidnapped, actually had a child, and the only place this child actually ever knew was in the room.
Mm.
And so it was really going through their journey of kind of their experience in the room, also being captives, but eventually escaping, and what it was like to be on the outside of
the
room.
And people can check out your review at insights.uca.org.au.
That's right.
Mark also loved it. Check out his review, thebigpicturewebsite.com. Also at cinemas this week, Russ, is a movie I think a lot of people would never have heard of, and I'm highly recommending this film, and they should go and find it. It's called God Willing. The reason you wouldn't hear about God Willing...
Why do I?
...is because it's from Italy, and it has subtitles, and that just weirds people out as soon as you say it. But my recommendation is strong because I think God Willing, which is a kind of comedy drama about an atheist going up against a Christian priest, I think the Christian priest in this film, not only is he the Italian George Clooney.
Wow.
Not only does he talk about Jesus a lot and he wears sneakers, but he, I think, is the best Christian witness on screen in Yonks. Highly recommended from me.
Okay, there you go. And guess what else is happening this week? Actually, tomorrow.
I give up. You tell
Monday me. Monday night is Australian Story is experiencing its 20th anniversary special.
Oh, good on you, Australian Story.
Isn't that fantastic?
And we're getting the American guy to talk about
exactly. Well, what's amazing about it is that there's 800 episodes, and for me, all 800 episodes would be fresh and new.
Australian Story is a big deal around here, Russ.
I'm your newest Australian in the room, just so you know. I actually am an Australian,
even though
the accent doesn't say
it. You should check it out tomorrow night, 20th anniversary of
Fantastic.
Australian Story on ABC. In Entertainment News Week, this week, Russ,
yes.
A little bit later in the show, you're going to be speaking about Now You See Me 2,
which is
a magic sequel that stars none other than Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe. Now, in Harry Potter news, Russ, if you can board a flight right now and get to London, you could probably do it by Tuesday and be there by Tuesday, you will see the onstage debut of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Really?
Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which is
a stage production.
It's an official spin-off in the Harry Potter universe. Author J.K. Rowling created it. It's set 19 years after Harry smashed that guy whose name we're not meant to mention. And Hermione now has black skin.
Oh.
Yeah,
well, that's new and different. Okay.
I know. Things changed in 19 years, right? So Harry Potter and the Cursed Child coming up on stage in London this week.
All right. So if you're in London, get over there. check it out. Also, something else coming up. Well, actually, just a big announcement. Maybe big for some and maybe not as much for others. But Sam Mendes, the Oscar-winning film director who directed the last two James Bond films, is done. Actually, no, it's done. He's actually done.
What do you mean his career's done? What are you talking about? You no, just pronounced his career dead? What?
He's not done. He's done with the 007 franchise, so you know. So he's done with that. He says, look, it's been an incredible adventure. I loved every second of it, but I think it's time for somebody else to be the storyteller.
I thought you'd come onto the big picture and within the first 5 minutes pronounce the career of an Oscar-winning director done.
Yeah, we always love just kind of like making that big pronouncement.
Wow, that's quite the statement, Russ. Now, before we get to now showing the nice guys, I've got a true or false statement to put to you, Russ.
Oh, really?
Later in the show, I'm going to be talking about Money Monster that stars George Clooney and Julia Roberts. Both of them have previously starred together in the Ocean's 11, 12, 13 franchise. Sure. Now, when Julia Roberts got the script sent to her for Ocean's 11, did George Clooney send it to her? Did he attach a $20 note to it? And did he write, I hear you're getting $20 a picture now? Okay. True or false?
Huh. Oh, that sounds intriguing.
Keep mulling that over.
Oh.
We'll get back to that after now showing the nice guys.
All right. Well, so actually what we have coming up then, so as far as introductions to the nice guys, we'll introduce you to the nice guys,
please.
Ben. Why not? Now actually coming out, not seen since 2014, when he dodged floods in Noah, and also when he was in probably one of the best Australian films that I've probably seen in many years is The Water Diviner.
Oh, Russ, yeah, you called
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe returns in the crime caper The Nice Guys. Co-starring with Ryan Gosling, Crowe's latest is an MA-15-plus rated throwback to the 1970s romps and also the 80s buddy cop films. As you may already know, Crowe and Gosling as the nice guys aren't that nice at all. Deliberately loaded with controversial elements, The Nice Guys does have something profound trying to bust out about what kind of person we are.
I want you to find Amelia.
You're the guy who beat up my dad.
Sucker punched your dad.
Seen this girl?
She's got dark hair. Name's Amelia.
What's in it for me?
He'll stop doing it.
Doing what?
Dad?
The mob is trying to spread its operation to Los Angeles. Somehow, Amelia is involved.
One thing we know for sure, something funny's going on.
So, hey, Ben, who is this movie really aimed at?
Mate, it is, as the MA-15 Plus would suggest, aimed squarely at adults, mainly at blokes, and particularly those who loved 80s action movies, or as you mentioned in the introduction, the buddy romps, buddy comedies, that kind of stuff.
Lethal Weapon kind of stuff?
Well, funny you should mention that, Russ, because the writer of Lethal Weapon, Shane Black, is the writer and director of The Nice Guys, and he knows his way around pairing up teams of dudes on screen and getting a lot of return from that. And he's got a great pairing here, I think, in Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling. These guys should do more movies together. They work very well as kind of like they're effectively a comedy duo. There's a bit of straight work going on, a bit of bumbling, a bit of pratfall, that kind of stuff that happens in The Nice Guy. The two of them are fantastic. They're some of the best things about this film. Same with co-star Anguri Rice.
I think it's Anguri
hopefully,
Rice.
Hopefully
yeah.
we're pronouncing that right. She's an Australian actress. She's about 13, 14. She's playing the daughter of Ryan Gosling's character in the film. And basically the film is about, it's set in the late 70s in California, and both Crowe and Gosling are playing private detectives, and they're on this case that somehow involves a porn star who may or may not be dead, and the industry around her, and then also the automobile industry somehow gets in cahoots with all of this like crime caper that's going on around it. I've been a little bit amazed, Russ, at how much critics are going crazy for The Nice Guys. It's up about 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
That site online that brings all the critic reviews together.
Sure.
Yeah, really high. It just means that critics are going crazy for it. I wasn't as crazy about it. I liked a lot of it. I was surprised at how straight ahead the story was. Mm-hmm. I expected a few more twists and turns and what came. But some of the surprises in this film are of the more offensive, controversial side. So it's a bit of a Shaggy Dog tale that you get up on screen. But what comes out of it that's really quite memorable, I suppose, is how offensive a lot of it can be. And go back to the MA-15 Plus bit. There's a lot of sex. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of just crudity up on screen. And some of that has to do with this daughter character of Ryan Gosling's character, which just gets a bit icky at times, and it like really pushes that's the medical term, I believe, Russ. Icky.
Yeah. All right, so what kind of lingers for you about this film, if you kind of look back on it? Because I mean, you're talking about the porn industry and the automobile industry coming together, but then also all these other components. I mean, what really lingers for you, and what do you think about it?
Well, in a year when we've had Deadpool and we've had Bad Neighbors 2, and those two movies aren't often discussed in the same sentence, but the reason I am is because they've both had a deliberately provocative, controversial, offensive material up on screen that kind of pushes the boundaries of what what more mainstream audiences are willing to accept, particularly when it comes to violence and sex. Both those movies had that, and both of them had it in the realm, particularly Bad Neighbors 2, around parenting and what children will be exposed to. So you get that up there in The Nice Guys as well. So as much as I found it was entertaining enough, The Nice Guys, and I don't think that offensive material up on screen you have to run a mile from every single time. I'm not saying you have to embrace it, but it's up there and meant to be provocative and meant to elicit a response.
Right.
I just wonder whether you're meant to be laughing at this or not. And what lingers with me the most, Russ, about The Nice Guys is this relationship between Holland March, which is Ryan Gosling's character, and his daughter, Holly. And what he exposes his daughter to. Now, some of that was just like shocking.
Right.
But she constantly during the film, Russ, is asking him this question. And she asks it of Russell Crowe's character too. Are you a nice guy? Are you a good guy? Or are you a bad person?
Oh, really?
And both of these lead characters don't really know how to respond to that. They keep trying to suggest that they are good blokes, really. Sure. But if they don't really seem to know where to look. If they look inwards, they have to admit that what they do and the things that they're involved with just aren't that nice and aren't that good. But if you're claiming to be a good person, how are you demonstrating that, either through what's at your core or the way you're going about expressing it?
Right.
So it reminded me of the Book of James. I went to that after watching The Nice Guys. There's a verse in there right at the start of chapter one that talks about if you're going to be who you are, you need to know who that is. And in James 1, it's talking to people who follow Jesus. And it's really saying, if you look at Jesus and want to live like Jesus, you need to keep your eyes on Jesus and live that out later as you go about doing what you're doing. If you don't, it's like looking in the mirror and seeing who you are, but then walking away and forgetting who you are. And I think that's what the Nice Guys demonstrates quite vividly, is if these guys are looking in the mirror and see who they are, if they actually think they're a nice person, well, they're walking away and forgetting it. They're just not doing it. What the Book of James really says, if you want to live out who you are, and particularly if you're a follower of Christ, as the Book of James is saying, you need to live that out.
Sure.
And The Nice Guys left me thinking about what kind of role model are you being through your actions, through your behaviors, through your thoughts, particularly if you're a parent. The Nice Guys, and like Bad Neighbors 2, isn't setting out to give you parenting advice. But if you walk away thinking about parenting, and I think you will from The Nice Guys, among other things, you will be shocked into realizing I actually better live out what I think I am. If I want to be a good person, if I want to be a nice guy, I need to know what that is and I need to live that out.
All right.
Yeah.
So this is not the movie necessarily to go to look for the example of nice guys or parenting.
No.
But really for Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling and this terrific young Australian actress named Angouri Rice.
Man, she's good.
Yeah, really good. In The Nice Guys. It's now showing at cinematic places near you. Definitely kind of, you might be offended by some of the content. It is MA-15 for strong sex, strong violence, nudity, and coarse language.
Russ, before we talked about The Nice Guys, I posed to you a true or false statement. So tell me if this is true or false.
Okay.
When Julia Roberts got sent the script for Ocean's 11, did George Clooney attach a $20 bill and did he write, "I hear you're getting $20 a picture now"? True or false?
I actually feel like I kind of know this one, but I'm just going to kind of go with it. I'm going to say it's actually false just because it wasn't that she made $20 a picture, but it was because she started making $20 million.
Oh, Russ, wow, your first time into true or false and you've completely smashed me. You are exactly correct. Everything you just said is right. And we're going to talk about Julia Roberts and George Clooney and Money Monster later in the show. Before we get there and coming up real, real soon, Russ, we're going to do an 80s flashback. We're going to do some power ballads. So we need to get our air guitars out. And then you are going to talk to us about Now You See Me Too.
Fantastic.
Welcome back to The Big Picture. We're at Soundtrack Choice for this week, Russ. And given you're a visitor to The Big Picture Dojo, we thought we'd ask you to pick something for soundtrack. So, my friend, what do we have?
What I want to do is take you back in time.
Pull
out your air guitars, put on your big blonde wigs, put on your airliner, and get ready to rock.
Thank you.
And that's Europe with the final countdown.
Of course it is, Russ. Who doesn't know that that's Europe with the final countdown?
I'm so disappointed. I was doing my air guitar right there at the very important part of there, the air guitar solo. Number one in 25 countries in 1986.
Wow, good on them. Man? But the reason that we're playing it in this show, is because you are very soon going to talk about Now You See Me 2, this magical sequel. We were thinking about magic songs. We were talking about that, weren't we? And
We were talking about that.
We basically played it because I wanted it to be played, because this is the theme song for, I think, the best screen magician that's ever lived, Russ.
Who
has ever lived on screen?
David Copperfield?
Ah, mate, you're so far off. Job Bluth, played by the excellent actor Will Arnett in the TV series Arrested Development. Will Arnett was in Australia this week talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Of course,
he's in that movie. But what he really should have been talking about is being Job on Arrested Development, the best illusionist that's ever been. Russ, have you seen much of Arrested Development?
Oh, you know what? I will have to admit it. Actually, I was telling Ben about this past week. I hadn't really seen too much of the show, but then I had this opportunity to binge watch it here recently, and I definitely can begin to see the love that you have for this character.
Oh, mate, it's so good. And we don't really have time to go into why my love for Job is so strong, but he's one of the most inept yet ridiculously overly arrogant magicians that you've ever seen. And he has incredible lame tricks that he does and pulls out at any occasion, and they always backfire. Always.
Always.
And they always really, really backfire in hilarious ways, Russ. And that's why we had to pick the final countdown, Job's theme song from Arrested Development.
All right.
We're up to our second now. I was going to say our second choice, but no, we haven't,
that's
Russ.
Right.
We're going to get to that later. That's Money Monster. What we're at to now is what your kids are watching for this week. And this is a movie that you've seen, Now You See Me 2, a magical sequel from Now You See Me out a couple of years ago, which is a surprise hit. It was a big surprise because it wasn't a franchise that involved superheroes or transforming robots or Harry Potters or hobbits or any of that kind of stuff. No. It was just about... It was about magicians, not wizards, but magicians that were explaining their tricks, et cetera, et cetera. Had a bevy of stars in the film. Everyone from Jesse Eisenberg to Woody Harrelson to Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman were in that.
Wow.
They're all back for the sequel, Now You See Me 2. You've seen it, and you're about to explain for us whether it stacks up as a magical sequel.
Right.
I've been told I have some control issues. So I'm going to try to control something that's a lot easier than people.
Stop.
You're magicians and thieves,
and we need your skills.
This is the key to every computer system on the planet.
We want you to steal it.
Yes, you were lured into a trap.
Russ, I'm not ashamed to admit it that I didn't think Now You See Me, the original, was going to be much chop, and it turns out it was. I really liked the first one.
I'll be right there with you. I loved the film, actually, the first one.
So, how does the sequel go? Does it stack up as a magical reheat?
No.
Come on, guy.
Just straightforward. It's just the horsemen are back, but I don't think they
The horsemen are who?
The horsemen, actually, we still have Jesse Eisenberg. We still have Dave Franco. We still have Woody Harrelson. But we actually have a new character because
Isla Fisher, who was in the first one.
Exactly.
The actress Isla Fisher.
Did not make it back. And so we have Lizzie Kaplan actually taking over.
So now it's effectively three horsemen and one horsewoman.
That's right.
But they love to call themselves the four horsemen. So they're these trotting around the globe magicians. But they're also like rock and roll Robin Hoods as well, aren't they?
Exactly. People are so excited whenever they just kind of show up because they know that something special is going
to
happen.
Which usually involves illegal activity, according to the first movie. But what about the second?
The second movie, yes. And actually it kind of starts off that way. But then all of a sudden there's kind of a twist.
Of course there is. There are a lot of good twists in the first one.
Oh, see, that's one of the best things about the first one. It's actually, they really knew how to handle the twist and really bring it in some different components that you weren't expecting. This one, unfortunately, they you can almost kind of saw all of it. It was almost like you were like, watch the hand over here, and actually then the trick actually happened in this hand.
They did better sleight of hand in the first one, where they would show you, often through the movie, they would demonstrate this massive trick and then go on to explain it a little bit later on. But are you saying in the sequel, as the trick is happening, they're explaining it as it's happening?
Well, they do. See, that's actually, you know, it's funny, even going back to Job, one of the big things about
Job. Let's go back to Job from Arrested Development.
Arrested Development.
An illusion,
but
Russ.
You he would even talk about the fact that you never reveal the trick. You know, I mean, you never reveal what it is. And unfortunately, with this film, actually, they go through and explain what's happening and going through and actually having the magicians reveal it.
But that was a cool part. That was an appealing part of the first movie, I thought. So are you saying that they're trying to slightly twist their own trick in the sequel and it's not working that well?
No, but see, if you think about it, in the first one, what actually happened in the first one, they didn't reveal it. It was actually Morgan Freeman's
character. He was this official kind of debunker of magic. Somehow he had a job going around exposing magicians for who they are. He's back in the sequel, isn't he?
He's back in the sequel, Max, because the whole thing kind of, and not to be a spoiler for the first film, but for those who don't know, he actually is kind of the villain, as it were, and actually he's the one who kind of gets caught out at the end.
Does he do that?
Surprise, surprise. And actually, he finds himself in prison. And the Mark Ruffalo character actually has to confront him.
From the first movie, Mark Ruffalo.
He
was like an FBI agent on the trail of the horseman.
Right.
And what on earth is the boy wizard Daniel Radcliffe doing in Now You See Me 2? Is he turning up as Harry Potter?
No, he's actually not.
I thought it might be like a crossover of franchises.
No, one of the first things that he required by being in this film, because he actually saw it after doing this film, but he just asked, please do not have me hold a wand. He just wanted to make sure they didn't want to have
him. He's got a beard, hasn't he?
He's got a beard.
Is it weird to see the boy wizard with a beard?
The beard, and he actually ends up being his name is Walter Mulberry, and he's this tech prodigy who supposedly has died, but actually he kind of brings himself back to life in a way to be able to kind of try and get this one important item that they have to get from his former counterpart or business partner, and trying to really control the world's kind of the information technology, as it were.
Okay, so it sounds like, and we'll go back to what you said at the start, you're quite disappointed with this sequel. We've chosen it for what your kids are watching this week because it should do quite well at the cinemas. I think it was one of those little movies that, yes, no one expected it to do very well. It did. They've come out with a sequel inevitably, as always happens, expecting that a lot of people, particularly in the market of like, say, 15 to 30, are going to go along and see this film. Russ, what is it a gain from seeing Now You See Me 2, do you think?
There's a couple key things that you really about as far as gaining from it. As far as you can enjoy the special effects, there's some interesting things about the special effects, and I think it is quite kind of a cheeky use of Harry Potter. But probably one of the things that really hit me, especially as I kind of looking at some of the elements as far as looking at the big picture story of things, and looking at the difference between magic and miracles. It's one of the things that they're really kind of trying to go through and define in this film. Is they're really looking at how science really can disprove all of magic.
Right. But take the magic out of magic with science.
With science, exactly. So science once again wins. Actually, Walter actually says that throughout the whole film.
Walter,
it's crazy. But even if you look at the biblical elements of miracles, even Jesus's miracles, if you're going back into the gospel accounts, a couple things, because a lot of you can see in the accounts there that people would even try and say that he was a sorcerer or a magician and that he was just doing tricks in a way. But I think it really kind of, this film kind of brings out and shows that magic is really kind of done more for entertainment value. It's done to draw attention to that person and be able to kind of look at it. And you can also say it maybe even deceive. While Jesus with the miracles, he was really doing that in a way of serving others, be able to glorify God in all of it, and also to reveal who Jesus really was as being God. And actually, he could control this. These were true miracles that were occurring, especially as you can see it throughout the book of John.
Wow. So that's what you came out of Now You See Me 2 thinking about. You were thinking about the miracles of Jesus as opposed to the magic or lack of up on screen that you saw as you went and watched this film. But you now, everybody, can go and check it out yourself and make of it what you will, because it is at cinemas and it's rated M for magic. It's rated M for violence and magic. It stars Harry Potter himself, that guy from The Social Network, and a guy who played God. That's right, Morgan Freeman. Woody Harrelson, Dave Franco, and Lizzie Kaplan are also in the film. And if you want to expand upon Russ's thoughts, and I know you do want to,
if you want
to find the expansive thoughts of Russ, you can go to insights.uca.org.au. Isn't that right, Russ? Because
that's right.
Every week you review movies for Insights. Now You See Me 2 is up there now, including many others that you've focused on in the past couple of weeks. Everything from The Nice Guys to Captain America Civil War and all that kind of thing, because that's the kind of guy you are, Russ.
That's what I like to do.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, coming up in the show, Russ, we are soon going to get to, wait for it, a real life magician.
A real magician? Is he going to do a
We tracked out. Well, you'll have to wait to find out. And then we're going to talk about Julia Roberts and George Clooney in Financial Bother in Money Monster. Welcome back to The Big Picture. We're
Hello,
at Press
Ben.
Record. Hello there, Russ. You're still here?
I'm still here.
Great. Glad to see you. That's good because otherwise it'd just be me because Mark's away for the next 2 weeks writing a book.
Yes, on a tropical island somewhere.
Yeah. That's right. Nice for some, isn't it?
Yep.
We are at the press record part of the show, Russ. And we just spoke, you just talked a lot about Now You See Me Too.
Yep.
And not very like positively, no. Let's be said. But that was just make-believe up on screen. And I really wanted to get into the real side of the subject of magic, as in, could we actually track down someone who is a real magician? Is that possible? I didn't even think it was until I talked to you.
Yes, and we found one.
You know an actual magician, magician.
That's right. Yeah, Peter Wood is a career musician who had a magician, not a musician, right. Actually, I think he's a musician too. But
of course he is. He's a man of many talents, but he's definitely a career magician.
That's right, a magician who has worked on TV and makes a living out of bringing out the magic at family events.
Whoa, yes. Yeah, and I got to meet him this week.
Oh, right. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So you caught up with him this week. Peter was this week behind the top hats and the rabbits coming out of them. So what is it like to meet an actual magician? And who happens to be a Christian, too?
Peter, you're a full-time magician. That's actually a job.
That is my job, Ben. That's what I do.
That's fantastic. When did you want to be a magician?
Oh, my goodness me. Since I was a child, my father worked with a fella who was an amateur magician. His name was Alan Vipond, and they became friends, and we'd visit each other's homes, and he'd do a magic show. And that's how I first became aware of magic.
How does one go about actually working full-time as a magician? Is there a magician college?
No, there's no colleges or schools. To become a magician, you basically have to teach yourself. There are people who might advertise magic classes, but they're usually just magicians, a bit short on work. I wouldn't rely on that. Nobody has ever become a substantial magician by going to a magic school. It's an art, it's a performing art, and you have to develop your own style and your own way of doing things.
Are there books you can go to that actually reveal the secrets of tricks?
As a kid, I read all the magic books in the school library and the local library. I ended up putting together a little show, and before I knew it, after a while, people started asking me to come and do their kids' birthday parties and giving me money. And it just developed from there, and I never intended to become a professional magician or a full-time magician. I thought I'd just do it until I grow up and get a real job, and I'm still waiting for both to happen.
What kind of different places have you worked in?
Well, I'm predominantly a children's and family entertainer. I do a lot of work in preschools around Sydney, and I do a lot of family functions. They might have birthday parties, weddings, christenings, all that sort of thing. During school holidays, there's vacation care centres, shopping centres, and I'm doing a lot of libraries at the moment too. So wherever families are and having entertainment, that's where you'll find me.
And do you like the term tricks or is illusion better? What's a better word would you like to describe for the things that you do?
I don't like the word tricks because nobody likes to be tricked.
No, they don't.
If somebody's tricked, it means I'm superior and you're inferior because I'm tricking you. So I do not use the word trick. I do use the word magic because that way I'm sharing an experience with you. This magical thing is happening and we're enjoying it together rather than I know something that you don't and I'm tricking you.
You are the first guy I've ever met who is an actual magician, but you're also a Christian. Now explain for me how Christianity and magic can go together.
Well, if you're asking me how can I be a magician and claim to be a Christian, then I have had that criticism a few times in my life.
I wasn't meant to be a criticism so much as I'm just curious about how that can possibly go together.
No, well, there are people mean one of two things. One, they can say, isn't magic condemned in the Bible? And the other thing they might be saying is, you're deceiving people as a magician, so how can you do that? Let me answer both of those. As we know, the New Testament was written in ancient Greek. In English, we have one word for love. You can say you love your wife, you love pizza, and you love the footy. We use one word, love, to mean three different things that are entirely different. Now, in Greek, there are three different words for love. It's three different sorts of love. The same with the word magic. We use magic to mean somebody who entertains people. And magic can also refer to people involved in occult practices. In Greek, there are two different words. There's magos, where magic comes from. That means wise. The three magi were the three wise men that followed the star to Bethlehem when Jesus was born. So the other word is pharmakos, which means a mixer of potions, making up love potions, that sort of thing. That's where the word pharmacy comes from. So a magician is really a wise person because he can do clever things that other people don't know how he does that. So is magic condemned in the Bible? Occult magic, most definitely.
And what do you mean by occult?
Oh, things like astrology, tarot cards, palm reading, all those sort of things are condemned in the Bible, and for good reasons, because most of those people are frauds. But I also do believe that there is a demonic element in some of those things. The Bible tells us to have nothing to do with that, and so we shouldn't. Now, the other people say, how can you deceive people as a Christian?
You've had this question a number of times, I take it.
Oh, a couple of times. My answer is, people pay me to deceive them. And if I don't deceive them, they want their money back.
but still, how can you sleep at night knowing that you're getting paid to not be truthful with people? Is that the best way to put it?
Look, magic is all about fun. It's about entertaining people, yes, about giving them puzzles and illusions. And it's all about fun. And at the end of the day, if people have seen a good magic show, had a laugh, and wondered about how could such things be, I think it's all in the name of fun. And there's certainly nothing that is dishonouring to God.
Oh, no!
What's that, Russ?
George Clooney and Julia Roberts are in financial trouble?
They are?
Yes, in this new hostage thriller, Money Monster.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, you see?
Very clever, Russ.
Pulled you in. I know. Made as a clear response to some of the things that went on during that, I don't know, if maybe you've heard about it.
What's that?
Was this worldwide event called the global financial crisis.
Oh, yeah, that old thing.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah,
you
know, it's that kind little of, thing it's, that smashed the economies around the world.
That was last year, you know, that was last year's news. Money Monster is entertainment with something to shout about. How well do Clooney and company get their message across? And this is what is, and that is as memorable as how Money Monster confirms something God warned us about a long, long time ago.
We are live in 5 minutes.
You have the revisions for the opening.
We're still making some changes.
Am I going to get the changes before the show or
you
after
the show?
You
know the drill. You just point the camera in my direction. We'll figure it out together.
It always sounds so simple and yet so moronic.
Here he is, the Wizard of Wall Street himself.
The name is Lee Gates. The show is Money Monster. Without risk, there is no reward.
Should I sell?
Should I unload?
Get some balls! Man up!
Who's that guy on camera too?
You want to complain about it? Go ahead.
Who is it? Anybody know?
Was it a union thing?
Whoa, Russ. Yep.
Is it a union thing?
That isn't a union thing. That's a gun thing. The Money Monster is starring George Clooney as Lee Gates, who's this fictional TV presenter. He's a finance guy. He runs this show on TV called Money Monster.
Right.
He's like the guys on the news that tell you about what to do with your money, and then people may or may not follow that advice.
It's kind of provocative, though.
It's a bit provocative, and there's a lot of really nutsy dance routines that he does at the start of his
show.
George Clooney dancing.
Wow.
Yeah. That's somewhat amusing. He's meant to be a little bit of a parody of on-screen presenters. Julia Roberts is playing the director of this TV program. And what that clip was somewhat demonstrating, Russ, is that the show one night, while it's live to air, is interrupted by a guy called Kyle waving a gun, played by his actor called Jack O'Connell, who I think is best known for Unbroken.
Unbroken, he was great in Unbroken.
Yeah, he's excellent in this film. And so he storms in and takes Lee hostage, the character George Clooney is playing, because he wants answers about some financial trouble that he has got into, which he blames on Lee Gates.
All right. So it sounds pretty intense. Is it thrilling or is it just kind of a thought-provoking film?
Mate, it's got all of those things, but not necessarily as constantly as you'd want them to be. I think Money Monster's good. It's not great.
Right.
And it's got so many great elements about it, though. And for a film that's directly commenting about not just the GFC itself, but the fact that people made money out of other people's poverty. So rich people seemingly got richer off the other people getting poorer. Now, some of those people that got poorer were rich people to start off with. But the character of Kyle is playing this working class bloke that was watching TV that had $60,000 that he got in inheritance, and he put it all in this one company that Lee Gates on TV told him he should put it in because that's safe as houses. Things went belly up, and so he's blaming this guy on TV, but not just him, he's blaming the head of the company that he invested in, who's played by an actor called Dominic West, who best known for The Wire, I think. So he shows up in this as well. So it's thrilling intense at different points, and particularly when you get the hostage situation live on air. I think that's played quite well by director Jodie Foster.
Oh, wow.
As in the Jodie Foster.
The Jodie Foster.
Also goes
child
behind,
actress.
Child actress.
And
now,
of the Lamb.
That's exactly right. She goes very well, I think, behind the camera. Does a good job. job here. But increasingly across the film, Russ, I think the movie becomes a movie. So you get those movie things that happen. Right. You know, those contrivances that have to show up, things that have to happen to either propel the story along or to move it to such a point, and it doesn't matter about credibility. Okay. So it sets up a really great scenario, particularly between Jack O'Connell and George Clooney on screen. The tension there is quite strong. But to get them out of that studio and then to go and do an ultimate confrontation, some of the wind gets let out of the sails, I think, as that's happening. But overall, I was really quite struck by Money Monster.
Okay. Well, but interestingly enough, you know, looking back at the Monuments Men that George Clooney was in, I felt that one got a little preachy.
That was just boring, Russ.
I know. But I'm just curious about this one. You know, these are successful actors preaching about money problems.
It can seem a little bit rich. That's right. But it's not like rich people can't say things about things that's that happen true. In the world involving rich people. And the George Clooney, who's also a producer in this, and Jodie Foster, Julia Roberts, are all in positions of power where they can say stories about people who actually don't have as much power as they do in terms of being able to influence entertainment and media markets and that kind of thing. So just the fact that they've got a movie up, and because they're rich people and commenting on what other rich people did during the GFC, and particularly how badly they rolled ethically and morally, I don't think it makes it a wrong thing, but you might find it difficult to swallow. That's okay. as an audience member. I found that distracting at some points. Like, come on, George Clooney.
Yeah.
Like, you've got your house on Lake Como. What are you telling me about this for? But there's a lot that Money Monster has got to say in a positive way about people's greed, Russ, about people's greed.
Okay. So does that, I don't know. So if you were to look at some of the different concepts you maybe see in the Bible in regards to money and the money monster, is there any kind of dovetails here that actually work?
Yeah, there are plenty. And so one of the resounding things for me going through Money Monster is just Money Monster basically picks up on something that God told us ages and ages ago, that greed is bad and greed is destructive. And contrary to what Gordon Gekko said back in the 80s about greed being good, it's not. And you see in Money Monster painted quite vividly the path of destruction and ruin that can happen, not just for yourself, but for other people around you if you go after more and more and more, if you're not seeking contentment. And one of the great places to go in the Bible is 1 Timothy 6 that teaches on the contrast between contentment and greed.
Okay.
So as I'm watching Money Monster, and particularly as it's getting to quite preachy conclusions, you know, those big statements they've got to make,
right,
even while that's all happening, it was really confirming for me what we've been warned about a long time ago. And I think Money Monster does this quite well. It's a very good warning movie. As much as it shouts its message sometimes, it's got a good message to shout, Russ,
right,
which is remember, greed is bad. And don't just think about it in terms of the big end of town, like the big high rollers. Think about it in your own personal life. And I think Money Monster does bring it back to home as well, back to ground level, back to working class people as well. So, Russ, I enjoyed Money Monster. It is a tense thriller. Jack O'Connell's excellent in it. George Clooney and Julie Roberts also. And a lot of the cameos are great. Jodie Foster is an excellent director. Tense, thrilling, and it also reminds you of what God told us ages ago. Greed is bad, Russ.
Greed is bad. So it might be worthwhile going out and checking out your local theaters.
Yep.
Be able to know that it's rated M for money. It's M for coarse language, mature themes, and violence and sex.
Mate, still to come on the show, you are going to bring us the top five Money Troubles movies. Money Troubles movies. And also, we're going to be joined by none other than Mark Hadley, who's going to talk about emoticons.
Welcome back to The Big Picture.
Now, Russ, every now and then here at The Big Picture, we like to move beyond movies and TV to take a look. We do
something else?
Occasionally, there is. There are actually things outside of movies and TV. We like to take a bit of a cultural foray. We like to look at other...
Foray.
That's right, foray.
Yeah. Was that your word of the day?
Yeah, it really was. Gotcha. It basically just means going and doing stuff. We like to take a look at other sorts of cultural trends that are shaping our world. And one of the most interesting is the way that we've learned to communicate through pictures.
Oh, wow.
Now, I'm not talking about those snapshots that we post on Instagram or Facebook of some meal that you just cooked and you want to
doodle over the last few minutes.
Why do you need to share that with your friends? I don't know. Anyway, people love that stuff. We're not talking about that though. We're talking about the miniature pictures that are filling up our text messages.
Oh, those.
That are sometimes actually filling up the entire message. Now, Mark Hadley might be on a break from the show, but he's still got time to let us all know why the emoji and the emoticon is starting to dominate our day-to-day chats.
All right.
I have an almost pathological envy of people who can speak a second language. As a journalist, I have heard and recorded a wide range of migrant stories, but a strange part of me still resents to this very day that my perfectly happy parents didn't uproot our family and move us to a country where I could have learned a second language with childlike ease. Strangely, though, after 3 decades of concentrating on the written word, I find myself learning a new multilingual way of communicating. It is the emoji. Part of our brave new world, or the end of civilization as we know it? Well, the debate rages red hot in academic circles as to its benefits, but I find myself thinking that this almost comic way of connecting actually provides us some real spiritual gain. If you and I were communicating via text on a mobile telephone, chances are you wouldn't have any problems understanding me if I signed off LOL. In fact, if I wrote LOL in capitals, you'd know I really meant it. That's because this abbreviation for laugh out loud has become so synonymous with this new style of conversation dominating the digital realms that we basically all understand it. Technically speaking, it's called an initialism. Now, there's nothing terribly new about acronyms in written communication, but if you're struggling to understand them, then rest easy. They're almost obsolete. The quest to increase the humanity of computer communication soon resulted in the rise of the emoticon. Collected together, punctuation marks made to create symbols that serve the purpose of body language. Behold, the wink had arrived online, and professional communicators the world over shuddered. Strangely, though, the sky did not fall, and for all the criticism, the trend didn't die out either. It got, well, more colourful. Emoji were the tipping point for most of us. You see, those little miniature graphics, real smiley faces, replaced colons and brackets, and were quickly joined by a bewildering array of expressive pictures, practices, and, strangely, household items. Well, anyway, their initial creator was a Japanese coder named Shigetaka Kurita, who says he was continuing a trend of connecting the head and the heart. He said, when you communicate on the internet, it's very convenient to have emoji because it's hard to express emotions only with text. Well, what did we think? Smartphone users voted with their thumbs, and when the Oxford Dictionary announced that face with tears of joy would be its 2015 word of the year, well, the war was over. And I believe that communication was the winner. You see, this development in computer-mediated communication isn't just an effort to get brief in our messages. It actually heralds a desire to connect the head with the heart. We wanted people to start knowing how we felt, or felt again as if we'd lost that skill. And strangely, researchers have taken a second look and discovered that there are some surprising benefits to using emoji. For a start, studies prove that we react to them just like we would to a real human face. They also soften the blow of a critique. Other researchers have found they help people understand you, and they promote happier relationships. In short, these pesky emoji can add meaning, improve communication, and deepen bonds. Take that, you anti-technologists. Well, Christians, take note too, because once again, it's not just our words that create our witness, but also what we choose to surround them with. Our race towards more rapid and prolific styles of communication, in my humble opinion, was threatening something profoundly human. Email was all about business. SMS aimed at communicating as few characters as possible. There was an inherent danger in stripped-back communication that we would actually edit out the care we should be expressing towards each other. Our goal to truly connect with each other, a God-given human trait, was actually being subtly undermined by the rise of technology. The Apostle Paul already knew about this mistake that we were starting to make in the first century AD because he warned the church at Corinth that the communication of facts, even the glorious gospel, without a heart for those who were hearing it, amounted to empty words. He said, "If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal." So there can be a place for emoji after all, because emotion plus truth can amount to real affirming communication. Now, of course, all this doesn't amount to anything like the assertion, if Jesus were alive today, he'd use emoji. Emotion has never been lacking in the written word, especially God's word. After all, initialisms, emoticons, and emoji are just tools, they're not the message. But many a person has received additional comfort from seeing verses sent by a friend and signed YBIC, your brother in Christ, or the symbol praying hands at the end. Some of those attempts at emotion have reminded them that someone cares, that they're not going through a valley of shadow alone. And of course, that should make sense to us. The Bible and our emotional witness complement each other. Proclaiming the truth of God's word and the love of his children for each other should never be mutually exclusive things.
Even though Russ, Mark Hadley isn't here, he's kind of here.
I feel it.
Oh,
I
we can feel it.
Here. Feel
that was
presence.
Mark explained to us how communication has radically changed recently by emoticons and emojis and the like. And for greater length and insight and more smiley winky faces, you can find a Mark's extended article on this topic in the latest edition of Eternity, which will be on a church pew somewhere near you. Somewhere.
Right.
Big thumbs up. You should have sent that to me.
Exactly.
And you can also check out Eternity every day on Facebook. Go to find Eternity News on Facebook because they're updating the latest news all the time, whenever you want it. It's right there, Russ. Find it on Facebook.
Eternity News.
Russ, even though it's your first time on the show for a while, you filled in for me late last year. Thank you very much.
It was hard shoes to fill, but hopefully I did it. Yeah,
it definitely was hard shoes to fill, Russ. You're right. Yeah, I don't know.
Was it a tough hat to fill?
Would have been difficult. This time around, not so much. A lot easier to fill in for Mark Hadley.
Whoa. Right. Less hair.
You're right. We're at the top five part of the show. We thought, well, we might as well give it to you, Russ.
Why not?
Gives me a break from thinking about all movies ever.
Right.
And because we were speaking a little bit earlier about one of the biggest releases at cinemas at the moment, Money Monster,
right,
got us thinking about money.
Money.
And so we gave to you, Russ, the top five Money Troubles movies.
Top five.
Five.
Number five, it's one that I'm not sure that you're really a big fan of, but I loved this film this past year, The Big Short. It's actually The Big Short.
Yeah, me not so much. Why did you love it so much?
Well, actually, because I went with my wife. Now, just so you, let me go back real quick. The Big Short is actually kind of one of those contemporary films that looks back at what we talked about earlier in the program about the global financial crisis.
Money Monster spun out of that, and so is the Big Short.
Exactly. And it kind of went in and looked at these four key characters who actually never really came in contact with one another, but it actually showing how they actually kind of bet against the system, as it were, but also it really kind of went through to explain the global financial crisis and why it actually came about and the impact. But the real reason why I even really loved this film is I took my wife, who is not Kathy, who is not necessarily a big financial guru, but she loved the little vignettes in between each one of the segments and how they were able to add in and really explain what was happening on the screen. And so we actually going through all the terminology. So I think that what it did for me, and actually the reason why I included it in this whole thing, in the top five, was primarily due to the fact that it really did a great job of explaining money troubles in people's lives.
Four.
Number four has to be a comedy.
Okay, sure. It didn't have to be. We didn't set that in your rules.
No.
Russ, when you do your top five money troubles list, you can set your own rules. So if you think number four should be a comedy, Russ, it should be. And what is it?
Well, and how often does Eddie Murphy make it into your top five?
But
Eddie Murphy into Trading
Places.
He has
showed up a few times. Trading Places.
Nice choice.
When's that? Yeah. Early 80s?
Yeah, early 80s. It's definitely one of those comedies. Actually, they kind of, he and Dan Aykroyd, back when Dan Aykroyd had a career.
That's true. Actually, that's very true. Yes.
But what they really were looking at was really toying with the fact of, is it something that can be taught as far as making money and earning money, and is it something where you just can do it, or you just have this natural ability? And so they really
you just get a boatload of money given to you out of rich inheritance,
right?
Yeah.
So these titans of industry, in essence, really bet against the lives of these two men, Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd, and looking at how they really, their money troubles would really come around. It's actually really kind of something they influence or actually control to a certain degree. And in the end, it really kind of comes around and they get their own, as far as they get their own best dessert, as it were, as far as these titans of industry. But I think it still holds its own as far as in the 1980s realm of comedy, but also for Money Troubles.
Three.
Show me the money, Jerry. Show me the money.
I didn't see that coming. I did not see that coming. I should have. Show me the money. Show me the money.
You can just see Cuba Gooding Jr. dancing, you know, making Tom.
I'm sitting now watching you do Cuba Gooding.
That's right.
Let's move on to.
Disturbing.
Of course, talking about the movie Jerry Maguire.
Yeah. Now, I was looking at the sport industry because, I mean, I think sport pervades so many films and money usually is involved with that. I thought Moneyball was a phenomenal one. I even had it in the title. But I really felt that this one was at the heart of it, really showing somebody in the industry as far as the sport industry, a sport agent, who is willing to actually turn the whole idea of making more money, but actually turning it to making less money, fewer clients.
And you're, of course, talking about Tom Cruise, who was playing Jerry Maguire in the movie Jerry Maguire. Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character, remind me of, who was he?
He was actually a football player.
Yeah.
A football player for played for the Arizona Cardinals.
As in, you mean American football,
That's right.
American football.
American football. Yeah. NFL. Sorry.
Say it correctly in Australia. Yeah. American
gridiron.
Football.
We'll gridiron. Gridiron. Yep. We'll just kind of make sure we clarify the interpretation.
Cuba Gooding Jr. won an Oscar for this, didn't he?
He did. I think it was about his last good role, too. I mean, it's kind of like going to that same thing.
Yeah, a little bit Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, definitely. But I think it really kind of showed the epitome of really kind of coming up against the system, having your own money troubles as far as looking at the idea of less clients, less money, but actually the better value that it is. So really, that became my sport money troubles movie.
Two.
Now, this one goes to the obscure.
Okay.
Because this one is a little bit different. Even
you had
though,
me at obscure.
Yeah, obscure.
Mm.
And mainly because it came from, I was looking at the idea of Slumdog Millionaire, actually, as being an idea. Because that one.
For this list?
For this list.
That's a fair choice.
Yeah, so it made it the honorary mention. But actually, Danny Boyle, who's actually the director for Slumdog Millionaire.
Yes.
And he actually had a film that was actually done in England before this called Millions.
I've never seen that, but I've heard very good things about it. That's a family film, isn't it?
It is really a family film. I mean, there's some, you'd be questionable at some points, because I mean, some of the ethical components to it, but it is a great film. As far as it looks, it's back in the UK when they were switching currencies from the pounds to the euros,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden this little boy, he's a 7-year-old little boy named Damien, who is playing in his playhouse, and then all of a sudden these thieves who had stolen a whole bunch of what was going to be the transitioning currency as far as the pounds, threw this bag off a train, and it ends up landing on this little boy's playhouse and destroying the playhouse. But he
sounds like many people's fantasy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what would you do if you had millions of dollars fall out of heaven?
Millions of pounds.
Pounds, millions of pounds. Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying. And what was great about it is watching his journey as he actually goes through and actually talks to the saints, as it were, as far as looking at what he should do. And
like seeking advice from saints.
Seeking advice from saints on what he should do in giving this money away. While his brother, who's trying to give him advice, actually all he wants to do is be able to see for his own personal gain.
Whoa.
And it's a great story of how it's going back and forth. People's response, what if you just ended up with $1 million? So as far as a great film, worthwhile for families to go out and pick out, and also I'd suggest that you go see it, Ben. It's called Millions, number two.
One.
All righty, Russ,
number one. Number one. Now, this is actually one.
Suspense.
It was not necessarily some people would consider a money movie. Doesn't have money in the title. But yet,
can I stop you right here, Russ? So you're not going to pick Wall Street at number one on a money troubles list.
Exactly. Actually, Wall Street was actually one of my honorary members. Yeah, I know.
Respect, Russ. Sorry, keep going. I'm just a little bit amazed.
It's iconic, I know. Greed is good.
Not so good, as we talked about earlier.
Not so good.
No, so what are you going with?
I'm going to actually go with It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful
Life. I love any time that movie gets mentioned, but why is that on a money troubles list?
Well, you would think that you don't think about it, because also even coming from the United States myself, it was a tradition of actually watching this film at Christmas.
Mm. It's been a tradition since it was released in the 30s.
Right.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Frank Capra.
Frank Capra directed it, and James Stewart stars in it. And
right.
So it's been ongoing for some time. Are you saying that it's been a constant Christmas tradition almost since it was released in the States?
No, it actually came along about in the 1950s. They actually said that they actually started seeing it more as a Christmas tradition. It really wasn't a big hit when
Is that because of the birth of TV and it was showed on TV every Christmas?
Exactly. That's
right.
What people saw it over television,
yes.
then DVD, I mean VHS, and then DVD and all that kind of coming about.
Yes.
So that's why they watched it at Christmas. But really the reason why I chose it as far as a money troubles film is that really the crux of the film, everything turns on the loss of $8,000, which in today's terms isn't that big of a deal, but back in the 1930s it would have been a lot of money. The loss of that money actually leads George Bailey, which is the James Stewart character, looking at considering committing suicide because of the loss of this money. But then all of a sudden he has a guardian angel, and I know the theology and the angelology.
A little bit loose.
Yeah, it's a little loose.
But Clarence is a cool angel, eh?
Oh, Clarence is a cool
angel.
He's
a very lovable angel.
He's kind of a buffoon, but yet you really appreciate him. But what he does is he takes us through a journey of showing George what his life would be like in Bedford Falls if George never existed.
Mm. Mm. And the impact it would have on that whole town, let alone his family.
The whole town. I mean, looking at the impact that it had, and also really what it showed for me, as far as looking at the community, looking at his friends, looking at his family, and showing that the help that he can receive from them, but also even reflecting on the fact that even us as Christians, sometimes I think we have a tendency to allow that money component to kind of move into first place, even over God. And as it says in Matthew 6:24, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, and he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. It's not that money is a bad thing, but again, when it starts to take a place opposed to God, we need to make sure that we are always looking at God first.
Mm, like the reminder we got in Money Monster, and you're saying It's a Wonderful Life is a similar reminder on screen of that.
Definitely.
Wow.
And I just want you to know, I'll lasso the moon for you.
Mary, I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and next year and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. Then I'm coming back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build bridges a mile long. What, are you going to throw a rock? Hey, that's pretty good. What'd you wish, Mary?
Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight?
Oh, Russ, that's a great choice. It's a Wonderful Life as your number one film on
number
the top
one.
Five Money Troubles movies of all time. Thanks for joining us, Russ.
Oh, it's been fantastic.
You'll
being
be
here.
Back again with us next week while Mark's still on his tropical island writing his novel.
Definitely.
What we're going to be talking about next week, Russ,
is it?
Nicole Kidman being Queen of the Desert. But does Queen of the Desert rule the big screen?
That's
we'll find
right.
out.
That's right. Also, next week, we'll be looking at Pride and Prejudice, and you know, zombies.
Oh.
Jane Austen and the Undead brought together that mashup that everybody's been looking
everyone's
for.
Everyone's been hanging out for it.
Everybody wants it. I know, be a little scared, maybe a little curious, but we'll talk about it next week.
And we're also going to do, I'm going to do a bit of a flashback to the future. I'm going to go back to my childhood when I used to watch Behind the News at school, but I'm going to watch it now because it's still going on ABC TV.
Wow.
Plus, Mark is going to bring us his top five Right Stuff movies. Next week, Russ, I'm still going to be Ben McKechnie. Who are you going to be?
I'm going to be Russ Matthews.
We will talk to you then.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.